and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast where we ask the important questions like, was Ben Affleck better off chasing Amy than being her husband?
Ooh, that's a good question. That is a good question. But I'm going to prove in this episode, buddy, that Amy Dunn is not even the biggest psychopath in this film.
Oh, are you now? Because I think I'm going to fight you tooth and nail the whole damn way on that one.
Okay, let's get going, man. Let's get going. How are you doing?
I'm good. Just to let people know, this is the censored version of the show. Swears will be bleeped, but fear not. As always, the full, uncensored, spicy Hawaiian version is available early in our Patreon for as little as £1. And the link to that is available wherever you clicked on this podcast.
It's £1 a month.
It's a pound, you know what I mean? It's £1 a month. But to answer your question, bud, I'm good.
Good.
I've got beans.
Good.
I've got legs.
Good.
You know,
good.
I'm excited to hit the new year running.
Good.
I feel like we've been away. We've had a little recharge. And I'm ready to attack 2025, man. It's going to be our year.
I'm ready for it, man. I'm ready for summon.
You got no beans.
I got a bean. There's one bean in there somewhere. I don't know. I'll strangle it. You know what I mean? Squeeze the juice.
I always knew you were a bean strangler.
All right. Today, we're doing Gone Girl. David Fincher's Romance for the Ages. Classic rom-com.
Yeah.
Starring Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. This movie is one of my all-time favorite Fincher movies. I'd say all-time favorite movies, not just a Fincher movie.
Really?
It's one of my all-time favorite movies.
God damn.
I can't wait to get into it.
Right.
It's one of these ones that's ruined me on levels.
Good to know. And that really brightens my day. So I'm going to repeat you. I'm going to say today, we got one question.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some stuff is going to get folded into this. I've got evidence, you've got evidence.
What's the thoughts?
But your theory is that Amy Dunn is not the biggest psychopath in this movie.
No, I think she is one psychopath in this movie, but I think there's an argument for there being an even bigger psychopath in this film.
So when did David Fincher make this movie, buddy? And how much was he given to make it?
It's 2014, mate.
Right.
Scotland decides to stay as part of the UK.
Yeah.
Gangnam Style is invading the airwaves. Was that 2014?
Yeah.
Flight MH370 is falling out of them. Fucking hell. And David Fincher is given $61 million to make Gone Girl.
Yes.
$61 million for this film.
Yes.
Fair.
Right.
Fair play.
Fair. Now, look, I thought I'd be a mate. I know you've got one bean.
Yeah.
I thought I'd save you a bit of work, Ben.
All right, mate.
So I've written the whole breakdown for you, bud.
Awesome.
I've printed it out on yellow.
You have. I can see it here.
And I think it accurately reflects how you feel about this movie, about life.
Okay.
You know, it's just done for you, mate. You're going to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm a mate and I've written it for you. And I think that there's not a controversial line in this.
Okay. So Gone Girl by Ben Groves. Age 36.
Yeah.
Nick and Amy Dunn seem to have the perfect marriage. He plays video games and spends her money, while she pesters him and tells him off. Ah, couple goals. Every year on their anniversary, Amy stages an elaborate treasure hunt, a delightful game which she can use as a stick to beat Nick for not remembering tiny details about their courtship. Feels familiar already. On their fifth anniversary, disaster strikes. And Nick's mother nurse is kidnapped. Mother nurse?
Yeah.
Oh, Amy.
Okay. I mean, it's your words, mate. I don't know. Yeah.
Nick's mother nurse is kidnapped, leading the media to claim he might be responsible for not only her murder, but much worse, responsible for doing his own dishes.
Can you imagine, Ben?
Outrage. Amy's side of the story is told through flashbacks as she writes in her diary, documenting all of her dull little woman complaints like, ugh.
That's rough, Ben.
He might kill me. And now the police are almost sure it's him.
That's a bit rough, mate. Okay.
But in a shock twist that will surprise no one, Nick didn't break the dishwasher. Cough.
What? It's your words, mate.
Instead, being the innocent victim of a manipulative, lying, arrogant woman, a tale as old as time, she staged the whole thing to make herself look like a victim. But she is, in fact, a psycho bitch like all the women in my life have proved themselves to be. Even the boardroom gaming cafe ladies. Jesus Christ. Nick uses the previously hostile media to appeal to Amy's narcissism, a tactic that works surprisingly well. Honestly, give him a complaint and then the palm of your hand. On hearing how sorry Nick is, Amy does a quick murder and stages it as a heroic escape, return to the house where they can stay toxically bound by lies, manipulation, and a mutual need to maintain their public image. Ah, couple goals. It warms my heart to see so many of my own romances portrayed on the silver screen.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. All right, that was brilliant.
So, Ben, you clearly hate women.
That was brilliant.
you clearly hate women. We've established that because you know.
Well, clearly, yeah.
All factual stuff that I wrote for you to say.
Yeah.
But I have a question about that, and it's a real question.
Okay.
Do you love this film because Amy Dunn confirms all of your long-held beliefs that bitches be great?
Oh.
Is it a misogyny angle in this movie? Is it a bad... Do you feel it's a bad thing that a woman is given so large and prominent a role as a villain?
Yeah. Sweet. Thanks for that, mate. What was the question? I was too busy mentally defending myself and being like, no, hold it in. So the question is this misogynist or feminist?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I find it interesting because you're going to claim that Amy Dunn is not the biggest psychopath, right? And I feel like she's a famous female villain. I think she's up there. She's really like quite iconic. In terms of the depths that she's willing to go to.
She is and she isn't. She does a lot for feminism to an extent, but she also does a lot for misogyny to a very different extent.
Mm-hmm.
She's very, very openly displaying psychopathic tendencies. She's also acting insane.
Yes.
To a level that is terrifying for anyone involved.
Absolutely.
And the only thing that bothers me about this whole film is... If you swap out, let's use Nick Dunn
mm-hmm.
as an audience surrogate for me or you, right?
Right, yeah.
Are you acting in any way, shape, or form as cool, calm, and collected as Nick Dunn? Or are you, in fact, sitting there being sort of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God?
Well, I've got a point about Nick in that I think of all the characters, and the reason I asked you a trap question, I have an answer already. In that I do think Amy Dunn is incredibly feminist, or I think this film is incredibly feminist because mm-hmm. although she is a villain,
yeah,
she is the main character of this film.
She is.
As a character, she's complete and she's fully realized. She has her own goals. She is driving the plot forward. Nick is kind of the prize to be won and she's the competitor in a way. It's Amy's story, and I don't think Nick is necessarily as complete a character. I think Nick is what he is because mm-hmm. the story needs him to be.
That's interesting.
I think a lot of the way Nick is not necessarily true to life or representative of Nick as a man, but is more useful for painting the metaphor for a toxic relationship that Gillian Flynn, the writer, wants to paint.
Okay. I do agree with you. I think the film is feminist.
Yeah.
I think it's feminist for a slightly different reason.
Right.
I think all of what you've just said is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. That does feed into the feminist side of the thing. But the thing that sells this movie as like true, you know, female hero type movie is the detective, the hero of the story.
True.
The one person that does her job
brilliantly,
exactly correctly.
She does it brilliantly.
Is not swayed by anyone or anything, including the media, including Amy's bullshit, including everything.
Including her own colleague, who's like, this guy did it.
Exactly. She's swayed by nothing. Her own agency to such a degree that she's not friends with Nick.
No.
But she gets on with him for as long as she needs
to. She's professional about it.
And then the second that she's like, I think he might have done this,
mm-hmm.
no longer all buddy-buddy.
Yeah, she provides an excellent counterpoint to the insanity of Amy. Like, Amy is an out-and-out villain. And I think that's another point that it's not mine, but the idea that if we're going to have women in cinema, I know you think it's a terrible idea, you'd rather they weren't. But if we are going to have women in cinema... that they have a full range of roles. You know, they're not just limited to damsels in distress or sexy femme fatales. It's like, no, some of them are going to be incredibly effective villains.
Yeah, I think...
But she's objectively a murdering sociopathic... Who else are you going to frame? I know who it is. Just tell the audience who you're going to put in the frame for being a bigger psychopath than Amy Dunn and why.
Nick Dunn. Nick Dunn is the biggest psychopath in this film.
Okay.
By a long margin.
Right, okay.
By a wide margin.
So to come back to your question, no, I wouldn't behave like Nick. I wouldn't.
Okay.
There is some troubling stuff there.
Yeah. It's interesting that you, who I would deem as a sort of, you know, high-functioning, relatively normal member of society.
Oh, God.
With no psychopathic tendencies.
Okay.
I had to check that I wasn't psychopathic after this film, because after the third or fourth watch through, I was like, it's got me a bit nervous. Like, there might be some creeping things.
How come?
Just because of the similarities that have happened, not in the plotline, but more in, like, I've never been more attracted to a woman in my entire life than after Amy Dunn returns.
Oh, wow.
And it only got worse after each subsequent viewing. It didn't get less. It got... the attraction group.
It explains so much, Ben.
Yeah, it does.
It explains so much about your history.
So I had to do a psychopath test, mate, because I was nervous.
Right, okay.
So I read the John Ronson book, Psychopath Test.
Brilliant, yeah, great book.
Well, I say I read the book. I read up to the point in the book where he says, some of you reading this will be thinking, oh God, I might be a psychopath. And if you're having that thought, you're not a psychopath. And I was like, well, job here done. End of book.
Great, great, great. That's all I needed from you, John.
Yeah, that was good. So that was that. But Nick Dunn, he's the scariest person that exists in this film by a long shot.
Tell me why.
Because when him and Amy first meet, they have this thing that a lot of people I know, me included, have done in the past, right?
Right.
It's this idealized version of the person that you're talking to, and you have this expectation and this sort of image in your brain that this person is, like, that's who you're trying to talk to. That's who you're trying to impress.
Yeah, you don't know the reality of who they are as a person, so you have to...
You
have to presume, and you have to kind of prejudge, right?
Yeah, so you're talking to this projection. You have these uncommunicated expectations that are rarely met, because why would they be? It's
never.
A fictional person that you've made up in your mind in seconds after saying hello to someone.
It's mental behavior.
Amy does the same thing for Nick, right? Amy's mask slips very openly and very honestly.
Right.
It's very... there is a pinpoint moment where you're like, oh, yeah, she's psycho.
Right.
That point never comes with Nick. But his mask slips just as much.
Does it?
Yes.
How?
He's an idealized version of himself, and he's desperately out of control the second that people start getting a peek at the real Nick. No one thinks he could have possibly been involved in this crime until Nick starts showing his true colors. If you watch the scene in the police station, he's sitting there and he's talking about the homeless problem and all this stuff. And then the detectives are like, well, what are Amy's parents saying about their missing child? And it's like, I don't know, I haven't spoke to him. And they're like, what are you doing?
What are you doing
right now? And he's like, oh God, I need to sort my... Okay, I'm going to go do that now. His father's in the next room, right?
Yeah.
The way that he communicates to is very misogynistic, very anti-woman. Father,
yeah, his dad,
who's mentally challenged. He's got some stuff going on. He lives in a care home and all this stuff.
He's a couple cakes short of a slice. I get it.
Do you see what I'm saying? But the way that he talks to him and the way that he talks to the officer who's handling him is caught very, very minutely by the detective, and you clock this thing in Nick's eyes where he's like, "I've just let slip. She's just sinned this." And he immediately excuses himself from that situation.
The way he... So the context is that his dementia-riddled dad has been found in the road, essentially.
Yeah.
As grandparents are often. And has been taken to the police station. They've been trying to get a hold of him. They can't get a hold of him because he's being interrogated.
Yeah.
And he comes out to the front desk, and there's a shortness and there's a condescension with which he talks to the female police officer behind the front desk.
Yeah.
That's really, it's not sort of pointed at by Fincher.
Yeah.
You kind of have to notice it yourself, which is genius, because Fincher's getting you to notice it yourself and making it feel like it's a clue you've discovered, not one he's given you.
Yeah, definitely. And this is the point that I'm making, right? So that little slip of the mask there, he immediately... his attitude towards all law enforcement then changes. For the rest of the movie, he is never as polite and charming as he was previously to that moment.
No.
And if you watch it a couple times, we've had a few weeks on this. I've watched it a fair few times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sort of like 6 or 7 watches deep now, because it is, it's ridiculous how good this film is. The rewatchability is insane on it. It is mind-boggling that he even attempts to keep it together for the rest of this. the little smirks at the photos when he's in the courtroom next to a picture of his missing wife, and they're like, this is a search party. And he does his nervous little smile.
I think Nick, though, is kind of at no point in the first act of the film, until the twist is revealed and Amy is alive, I don't think he, unlike us, unlike the audience, I don't think he ever falls for it. I think at all times, he completely fails to grasp the situation and is just so convinced that, oh, it's Amy being weird, or it's Amy being manipulative, or it's for some reason it doesn't click with him, the gravity of, like, your wife might have been taken by strangers.
Yeah.
She might have been taken by a murderer. None of that really hits him. And is that not because he's experienced with Amy's manipulation and just goes, there's absolutely no way that this incredibly unlikely set of circumstances has happened? What's much more likely, given that she does this annual treasure hunt, is that she's gone weird. Because she is weird.
Okay, this all could be true. And it all could be very innocently being sort of like, it's just she's going too far with this one, right? We're in a rough patch.
I
was going to leave. I think she was looking for a way out. This is the easiest thing for both of us.
Right.
But you have to remember that he is none the wiser of what Amy is doing or where she is or any of this stuff.
Yeah.
The only things that he knows are exactly what the police know. There was pints of blood poorly cleaned up in the kitchen. There was blood splatter above the wall. There was stuff ruined in his house. All he's bothered about is asking the detectives to feed his cat. And this is the thing that I'm pointing out. I have to keep reminding myself that Nick is none the wiser. He is completely blind in this entire situation. And it's not that he's acting like he doesn't care. It's acting like he understands everything that's going on whilst having zero information.
Right.
That is mental behavior. That is mental behavior.
It is.
Have no clue where your wife is.
It is.
You're trying to control a public opinion to make yourself not seem like a murderer, but are then so nonchalantly worrying about the homeless in your neighborhood. It's like.
But here's where I'm going to start my defense, right?
Go on.
Is when I said earlier that I think Nick is less complete as a character, he's less standalone. Amy, she's everything she needs to be, and everything about her is consistent to who she is. I think Nick is more of a sort of narrative construct, and is what he needs to be to get us to the last act. Because the last act is kind of inherently ridiculous. It's kind of nonsensical.
Is it?
It is, in the sense that in the reality of the situation, this man's wife has been abducted. Okay, well, that's an unusual circumstance that happens to very few people. But actually, she's not been abducted. She's framed him for her own abduction and murder to get back at him for checking out mentally of their marriage and cheating on her with one of his young students. Okay, well, that's that. Okay, now we're in film territory. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, now she's seen him on television, forgiven him because she thinks he wants to try again, and has now murdered the man that she's hiding out with, and is now back with her husband, Nick, who knows that she's a murderer, who knows that he tried to frame her for murder, but is happy to stay there. It's completely jumped the shark into fantasy land at that point. Okay. Unless you look at the film metaphorically and figuratively, because it makes perfect sense as a portrayal of what a toxic relationship becomes. A sort of play act of two people playing roles that they are no longer true, but they're too inconvenient or damaging to put away. Like, Nick will lose his comforts. He'll lose his bar. He'll lose his source of money, and he'll lose his reputation. And she'll lose what she thinks she has in the, you know, there's hope in this marriage and we can fix it and this kind of thing. Neither of them believe it, but it's more comfortable.
Okay.
I know for a fact, Ben, both you and I have been in relationships where we're not in it anymore. We've fallen out of love, but the other person has kind of not done all that much wrong.
That's true.
So you can't break up with them, because what possible reason would you give? They're just being the person they've always been. It's me that's changed. I know. And then you're just stuck there and you're like, if they got hit by a bus.
I'm going to have to give a eulogy. And people are going to expect some heartfelt shit. And I'm going to be like, right. Welp.
right. And I feel like that, like that's the situation that Fincher and Gillian Flynn, the author of the original novel and the screenplay, want to sort of portray. It's like, let's set up a bunch of circumstances where you can watch it happen in a film and go, that's exactly how my marriage feels. I feel trapped by a psychopath who that doesn't is, actually
that is
love
a very
me.
Good way of looking at it.
Nick is the passive.
Okay.
It's just too difficult. I'm too much of an idiot. And that would involve putting effort in and I'd look bad. And you and I have both been in that situation where we're like, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, but if I end it, it will be effort and I'll look bad and I'll feel guilty. So it's easier to just keep watching Real Housewives.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. I think everyone's been in that position to a degree at some point in their lives, right?
Right.
And I think...
at least once.
I've been doing like a lot of work on myself over the past, you know, 8-9 months.
You have?
Holding the mirror up, really taking a long, hard look and being like, wow, wow.
You can't go gym anymore either, so that mirror's getting crueler.
Oh, dude, don't, because it's actually starting to hurt now. It's I haven't been to the gym in well over a month, and it's literally like...
I know, you...
Yeah, it's a whole different thing, but it's just going to make me sad. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. We'll get into it at some point when I'm allowed back.
But you've been
gym.
Holding a mirror up to yourself going, oh, I look like a butter puppet. Yeah,
I'm going, how immature do I have to be to not even respect a person enough to just go, I'm wasting your time. I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
There is there might be something here for you, but there is nothing here for me. And that is just cruel and unfair for me to not say anything.
Yes.
And it's 2020, like hindsight's perfect vision. You know what I mean? Hindsight's 2020.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And it's incredible that like you can sit, you know, a few months down the line and look at all your mistakes, or you can sit for a few months and look at all your mistakes and just go, could have done that better.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But what I feel like, right, is so I've read some interviews with Gillian Flynn. I haven't read a book. Read some interviews with her. And she is obviously, like you've just said, the author of the book, the author of the screenplay.
Yeah, yeah.
She's described the story as centering around two psychopaths.
Oh.
And then kept it ambiguous on purpose.
Ooh.
And this is what annoyed me, because I was like 3 or 4 watches deep at this point, and I was like, Gillian, you son of a bitch. Oh, you've got yourself another watch through. All right, let's lock in. Let's go again.
Okay, okay.
I think Amy gives us the answer. I think Amy tells the audience directly. I think she sums it up perfectly.
Right.
So, also, just really quickly, in all of my research for this, no one calls Nick Dunn Nick.
Really?
Everyone refers to him as Ben. Just because Ben Affleck disappears into Nick Dunn so unbelievably well that people just forget that it's not Ben Affleck.
I can't imagine how easy it must have been for Ben Affleck to A, have to pretend that he's in a failing marriage, because he's been in like 5.
Oh yeah, he's a pro at this point.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And B, have to imagine what it's like to have media outside your door covering your failing marriage 24/7.
Dude, he's lived this through and through. You know what I mean?
He really has.
He's the man for the job. There is no other person that's better fitted. So Amy, what she says, I think is exactly right. They're both their best when they're trying to be worthy for each other.
Yes.
When they first met, they both thought the other was perfect. They both worked to make themselves better for that reason and that reason alone.
Yep.
They grew to resent one another. When they realized they're not perfect.
Yeah.
They're not perfect people, and they're not perfect for each other. And in the end, they both delude themselves into thinking that they can both go back to the beginning and maybe try and be that perfect person, putting forth a little bit more effort. Or maybe if we try it this way, it'll be different this time.
Oh,
fucking hell, if we haven't all been there.
Right. And I think for me, the core of the film is the dynamic of a failed or failing marriage.
Yeah, of course it is.
And what those characters have to be in order to make the most failed marriage, right? Because it's almost like how are we going to depict, you know, you don't have, there's a chicken escape from the petting zoo. It's like, no, there's millions of dinosaurs. They're all out. It's the most disaster.
And this film does that for marriages.
It does that for marriages. It has to be that hyperbolic thing of like, we're gonna do it big so you can see the parallels to your life.
1,000%.
There's a huge thing about identity in this and a huge thing about perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting film for Fincher to make at this point in his career because it's essentially a film about storytelling.
Yes, it is.
It's essentially a film about who you think you are doesn't matter. Mm. What you've done doesn't matter. What happened doesn't matter. It's about who people think you are based on the story you tell them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is David Fincher's, fourth, fifth serial killer crime mystery film?
Yeah.
And every time he tries to do something else, the audience are like, nah. Benjamin Button, nah. Nah.
I don't know, man. Benjamin Button was good. It was up there. It was weird, but it was up there.
For you, I think for a lot of the audience, critically, it wasn't as successful.
Benjamin Button did, for autistic people, what The Notebook did for people wanting romance movies.
Fair.
Autistic people the romance story of the ages. Yeah, it's a love story. Yeah, but it's just a love story, isn't it? No, because it's an old man in love with a 7-year-old. Yeah, it's a bit problematic, mate. He's got the mind of a 7-year-old.
Right.
I'm in. Sign me up.
I've got a quote here where David Fincher says, the adjective Fincheresque makes me a little queasy. It's a good thing to have an audience have some expectation of you mm-hmm. because it gives you opportunities to subvert that. When you're making a movie like Gone Girl, it's not a bad thing that people have seen Seven and know that stuff can seriously go off the rails. You get to play with expectations. And I'm like, okay, so he knows. He knows he's a genre director now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then he goes on to say, but I don't trust anybody who doesn't go to bed at night feeling like a fraud. Feeling like tomorrow is the day I get the call and they rescind my ability to do this thing that I love so much that I would do it for free. There's a part of you that's always waiting to be found out. And I wonder how much of this...
That's messed up.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of this film is David Fincher kind of telling the story of a man who doesn't exert the kind of control over storytelling that he does. He's famous for doing 1,000 takes. He's famous for, like, if David Fincher could control what craft services were serving on that day, he would. Mm. He's over every department. He's famous. People say David Fincher knows everybody's job on set and how to do it and what it takes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he does not want to be caught smiling a little bit at the camera when he's supposed to be making an appeal for his missing wife.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great way of looking at it.
It's almost like Nick Dunn is the anti-David Fincher and Amy Dunn is the audience just going, no, we don't like that. We don't want that. It's got to be perfect.
Because
he started out with Alien 3, which was the opposite of the films he makes now. Nothing was in his control. Yeah, and
it
nothing,
was awful.
Right.
And he makes good films now.
How dare you? I love Alien 3.
Yeah.
But my last quote of from David is, presentation is a weird, translucent, diffuse plastic hymen between what I want it to be and what you want it to be. And it feels like at this time in his career, he's really wrestling with like who he is and what his identity is. And the things that he makes are now finally being accurate representations of what it is he wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's incredible that he's doing it with a film where one of the central characters cannot get a thing about his presentation
it's
right.
It's like oddly poignant, but also... It's very Fincher-esque.
It's very Fincher-esque. Nick Dunn.
It's very Fincher-esque.
Nick Dunn is making the Alien 3 of missing wife appeals.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunately incredibly accurate. The whole media aspect of this film as well really fucks me up though.
Right. Like, right.
In a bad way. We're just talking about who can tell the best story and the presentation mm-hmm. you're putting out and stuff. I've got a quote from Fincher here about this.
Right.
And he's put, people have become more accustomed to recontextualizing their shortcomings.
Ooh.
The business of shining things up is no longer just the purview of publicists and chat show hosts. It's permeated to everybody.
Ooh.
With the information age, people are on the cover of their own Rolling Stone. They get to make decisions that cast a better light on what they've accomplished.
Right.
I mean, when people are documenting everything and uploading it, there's a tendency to edit it.
Oh, I feel
attacked.
There's
not a lot of people going. Got up today, was lonely, masturbated. End of quote. And he's bang on right, because this is where this film ruined me the first time I watched it.
Right.
The first time I watched it, the trust issues that it gave me was, I don't know anyone. Realistically,
no.
I don't know anyone.
No.
Even Margot, who's Nick's sister in this film, right? She's there for him through thick and thin. She works at the bar, which is his and Amy's bar. She's there. She's there to help him with quizzes. She understands their dynamics. She's the shoulder to cry on. She's his rock. Everything.
The crutch, the pillar, the spine.
Dude, the stuff that we learn that he has just lied to her about, or kept away from her and done in the shadows behind her, is disgusting.
He's literally sleeping with one of his students in her woodshed.
Yeah.
In her garden. In her
woodshed, yeah. Like, and in their dad's house, whilst their dad is in a care home. And it's like, he's not told her any of this.
No.
And periodically throughout this film, she's like, you need to tell me everything because I need to be able to trust you. And he's like, I have, you know it all. What, do you think I'm a liar? What do you think I'm going to What do you think I'm going to do? Do you think I've killed my wife? This manipulative, psychotic piece of shit runs his own biological sister into the ground repeatedly and then just casually laughs it off whilst they're talking to Tanner Bolt, his lawyer, that Margot paid for by remortgaging her house, 47 grand in savings, and then he's casually laughing, being sort of like, I fucked her in the woodshed just outside. There's tons of stuff that you all don't know. And she's sitting there like, are you joking?
I think this is where, this is probably my strongest defense of why Nick isn't a psychopath.
Okay.
I don't think he's interesting enough. I think Nick just a cowardly, small liar who's lazy and self-serving and conflict-averse. I feel like he's a 20 years older version of the character that Ben Affleck plays in Mallrats.
What? He's incredible in Mallrats. There is so much to him in Mallrats. That's unbelievable that you've just said that.
In Mallrats? No, in Mallrats, he's just punching people and being a skeez.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's a 22-year-old version of the 45-year-old we see now.
That's...
Who thinks he's all that, thinks he's an intellectual, thinks he's grown up, but he's still from Missouri. He's still from the back end of nowhere.
He is.
He doesn't really know anything. And he puts on these fronts of being this intelligent, moral man because he's got nothing going on. And I think for him to be a sort of have intention gives him too much agency.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just a moron. He's a piece of shit moron.
You there, sir, have fallen right into Nick Dunn's trap. Right into Nick Dunn's trap. Because Mallrats Ben Affleck isn't afraid to stand out.
That's true.
He's not afraid to be different.
That's true. Okay. I retract that.
A very common
then.
Thing of psychopathic people is that half of them don't even know that they're psychopaths.
Right. 100%.
They're very high functioning. Mm-hmm. They fit in well. They mask well. They mimic stuff around them, their surroundings. They blend into the background.
Mm-hmm.
They do not stand out.
Right.
Everything that you've just said about Nick Dunn is a carefully crafted, precise persona that he is presenting to the world that slips every now and then to show a very angry, a very bitter, and a very twisted individual that is willing to lie, manipulate, to double cross, and just not give a fuck about any of the fallout because he'll laugh it off with a lawyer that someone else has paid for whilst he's making his defense that his missing wife is in fact a dickhead. That's the only thing. There is a scene in this film where Andy, the girl that Nick Dunn is cheating on Amy with, comes forward to the media in front of Amy's parents, in front of the world, and says, I had an affair with Nick Dunn. I feel awful about it. I believe that Nick had something to do with Amy's disappearance.
Right.
Which I never really understood as to why she would do that at that exact moment, right?
Right.
And then the fourth or fifth watch through, I realized that Andy shows up a little inebriated to Margot's house.
Yes.
And it's all like hush hush and, oh, I thought you said you were going to leave her.
You were going to get
a divorce. You were going to come be with me. And he's all like, don't you ever f-ing say that aloud ever again. Do not repeat anything that you've just said. And then proceeds to have sex with her.
In his sister's house.
In his sister's house, on his sister's furniture, whilst his sister is asleep at the bottom of the hall, whilst his wife is missing, whilst he's none the wiser of whether she is actually missing or not. He's just going, nah, she's a dick. Yeah. Nah, she's weird. She's pulling a weird one.
Yeah.
And then Andy, after a few days, goes to a vigil.
Right.
And he's like, hold on a sec. So he's just out and out lying to my face so that we sleep together. Mm. And then he's up there on this stage pleading to the world that his wife's missing. Oh my God, I love her so much. You know, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's just, she saw through this sort of like facade.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
As did many other people. And the second that this stuff starts happening, people around him will come forward with things. But when Andy comes forward and he's like, I had an affair with Nick Dunn. I now think he 100% had something to do with the disappearance of Amy. What does he do? It hits, the news hits just as he's about to do an interview to try and clear his name that he's been rehearsing for days, right? Tanner Bolt. Very, very, very famous, very good at what he does, possibly the best of what he does. Defense lawyer is like, pull out of this immediately. You cannot come back from this. Bow out of it right now. No, I'm good. No, I got this. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. No. It's fine. Guys. It's fine. Just let me cook. Even his sister's looking at him like, what are you doing, bud? What are you doing? This is...
And then he nails it.
Do you know? Because he can just mask. He can just present himself in this weird. He has this insane manipulative ability to just be whoever he needs to be. He's a salesman.
I don't think he does. We don't see the interview. Importantly, we don't see the interview. And I don't necessarily think that he does some incredible Machiavellian bit of manipulation where he suddenly turns into a different guy and swings it. I don't think it's a heroic effort. I think it's a normal effort. And I think what the point is that the media in this film, as long as they've got something to talk about.
Yeah, of course.
As long as there's an angle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like what this film is kind of portraying is that they've had a week of painting him as a bad guy and they've kind of run out of content on that angle.
I mean...
All it takes, the media, is one interview with him looking a bit sad and going, because I miss her and I love her, right? And they go,
right.
Oh, guys, now we can make a week's worth of content about how we were wrong.
I agree to an extent.
It demonstrates the weakness of the media, not the strength of Nick.
I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to disagree.
Right.
Because again, we know everything
right.
from Amy's side as well at this point. Nick does not. The media do not. Everyone is still certain that Amy's dead and they were actively pushing for the death penalty moments before this interview. It's infuriating me that I can't get that I'm looking at Nick and going, definite psychopath.
Right.
He is 1,000%
right.
just this crippled, evil, maniacal, manipulative piece of shit. Just incredibly well. He's dressed well. He's good looking. He presents himself in such a way where it's like, God, he's a good guy.
Okay, there is that weird bit where they're in the car. He's just done the interview. They're talking about how he smashed it. They're like, dude, don't be callous. Don't be like, don't over celebrate this.
Yeah, and he then normal people would do that, right?
And then he then immediately compliments Andy, the young student who's outed him as having an affair. She's a good girl.
Mad.
She's a good person. In a way that it's okay. Okay.
Mad that, innit?
Hmm.
Mad that. Because
that's like an unnecessarily selfless thing to do, having just been criticized for being selfish.
Yeah. You know, like sometimes when you're in competition with someone and you come out on top. You win.
Yeah.
You get first place, but you're like, God, they put up a good fight though, didn't they? That was a good effort from second place.
Yeah, you want to virtue signal a little bit.
Yeah, they've fully earned that silver medal.
Yeah.
So he just sees it as a game. It's just all a big game. All a big game. Who can look best? Who can tell the best story? Trial by TV. Innocent until proven guilty. Nah.
But okay, popularity contest, mate. If he is a psychopath though,
yeah,
he's the boring kind. And I feel like psychopaths get a bad rap, right? You get the funsies kind.
You do.
And out of those ones, you get great horror franchises, none of which I've seen, but I've heard good things about. My best mate, yeah. Ben, he's a big fan of Halloween the 13th and all them sort of ones, you know, Freddy versus Chucky and what, yeah. But anyway, they're the funsies. They're the funsies psychopaths. Then you get the boring ones who just run companies and have got no problem firing 20,000 people.
Sure.
Because they just don't feel for them, you know?
Sure.
They're like, oh, the business needs it. Gone.
Sure.
Someone comes up and they go, oh, I really need this health insurance. And they're like, yeah, but you've got cancer, so we're going to cancel it because that's expensive.
Sure.
Like, those are the boring kind of psychopaths. And Nick, if he is a psychopath, he's one of them. Because the only thing he uses his psychopathy to do is make his life easier.
Yeah.
He's got no ambition and no ideas. He's just whatever gets him on the sofa playing Battlefield again quickest.
Yeah, that's the ambition. The ambition is an easy life. The ambition is the easy road that takes minimal resistance. That's the man. That's the ambition. And the man that you're describing in your boring kind is Patrick Bateman.
Yeah.
From American Psycho.
Sort of. But Patrick at least has the imagination to imagine being a fun psychopath. Spoilers. But
what I'm saying is that I don't think that you are correct. They are the boring kind.
Right. Thank you.
Who cares? You know, I mean, like, right. Yeah, good for you. It's, you yeah. know, Fortune 500 company.
Right.
Oh, gosh. Who cares? The only issue that I have is that I think Fincher's accidentally made one of the greatest horror movies of all time, but also one of the best date movies of all time.
No, Ben. No, come on.
This is the perfect date movie.
How?
And
how?
The reason is Ben Affleck plays Nick Dunn as one of the most terrifying types of psychopaths that exist.
The boring kind.
You can say the boring kind. That's fine. And that's fine.
Yeah.
To me, Nick Dunn is so predatory.
Right.
To appear docile and, oh, woe is me.
Right.
I'm always the victim and a big harumph whilst simultaneously manipulating every situation that he's in, every relationship that he's ever touched.
Yeah.
Every scenario that his name is ever uttered is wildly, vastly manipulated and skewed in such a way that he will always come out looking favorable. That terrifies me, because the fact that Amy is so outspoken.
Right.
She's at least honest with it.
Uh-huh.
She's least open about it.
At least she's fun.
I'm a full psychopath. Right. I will murder someone whilst they are inside me and then frame it as me being the hero.
That was the bit you found hot, wasn't it? That was the bit you found hot. Dying inside someone is like your number one goal.
What a way to go. NPH in Gone Girl. What a way to go. I would want that entire story etched out on my headstone. But not well written.
Right.
Full of and thens. Right. I want it all and thens.
All and then. Just and then. And then.
And then.
And, yeah, okay,
and then,
great.
And then box cutter. And then throat slashed. And then.
You're imagining quite a grand headstone, buddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. Okay, you're planning on dying with means.
Yeah.
Okay.
2025 is my year, man.
That's you know true. There we go. There's a bean. We put a bean in the boy.
There's one in there. But yeah, so he's the scariest type of psychopath. He's the one that's so mundane and so quiet and so reserved that you don't ever truly look at him.
So how is that a perfect date movie?
Picture this conversation that we've just had here, this little debate, this fun little debate between two people that have just met themselves and are trying to put their best foot forward.
No, because that's unfair, because they, in this film, Nick and Amy Dunn, literally at the start, when they're having their romantic kiss in the near the sugar factory, which I have to just very quickly, early on in this film, where they have their first date and they go for a romantic walk through New York at night.
Gorgeous.
And then they stop outside a bakery.
Yeah.
And there's sugar in the air from where they've been loading the sugar. And it cuts to a long shot. And there's just four bags of sugar on the floor. Now, I've carried those bags of sugar at work.
Yep.
They are 20 kilos. So what they've actually done is they've walked behind the worst bakery in the US that's happy just shit mixing 80 kilos of sugar on the floor every night.
Yeah. Welcome to New York, baby. Their secret ingredient is foot traffic.
Right. So they, I mean, the rats there must just all have diabetes.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
But they say there that let's never be one of those boring couples. Let's never be one of those horrible couples that hate one another and she henpecks him and he...
Ooh.
And they have that exact conversation.
That's a little bit later. And the reason they have that conversation is because Amy's about to tell Nick that she's going to give her parents $1 million from her trust fund. And then she preempts this by going, let's never be one of those couples that hate each other.
Mm, you know what I mean?
Let's never do this.
Okay. That's
out
fair.
And out manipulative.
And that's one of those, I'm feeling really gentle and feeling like really fragile today. I really just can't deal with anyone shouting at me. So anyway, I sold the kids.
Yeah, I gave away $1 million from our money. Are we going to, we weren't going to have a conversation about this? No? Okay, sound. Nick's mask slips a little bit in that scene as well. Okay, it's very gentle. It's very subtle, but Amy notices it. And it changes the rest of the movie.
Okay,
but
are we okay? So we're saying perfect date movie because what it acts as a filter.
Are you joking?
Right.
Look at how Nick and Amy start their relationship. It is the most romantic thing.
Right.
The bar is so unbelievably high. Mm-hmm. She's the cool girl. He's the cool, charming, slick guy. Mm-hmm. The opening lines are just amazing. They sit and they play these funny games. The sugar storm.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
2 years later, nothing but solid. They get each other the same gifts. They're so cute. Oh my God, this is awesome. Even the proposal, man. The proposal is insane.
Yeah, it is.
Can you imagine ever being that slick in your entire life? I've not even been one iota of that slick ever.
Okay, I hate to admit this, but you've been wearing me down. When I watched this scene, the proposal, I wasn't a fan. Because what he does is he does that classic move of proposing to somebody in front of a crowd. But normally, you know, you see when you see it at like football games in America or on like in front of the Trevi Fountain in Italy. And I always think, God, that's pressure. God, because what if it's a no? You've then got all, you're doing it, you say no in front of all these people. What he does is worse. He does it at a table of six people. You've played gigs, and you know for a fact it's easier to play to a full room than it is to play to four people who can look in your soul.
It is.
You've done a lot of those gigs with four people staring into your soul. They're uncomfortable. Yeah. And then imagine somebody gets on stage and goes, Ben, will you marry me? And you're like,
I'd have set myself on fire immediately.
Right. So I hate to say this, it does lean down the psychopath route because he's not thought what that's like for her. He's just gone,
oh, no, he has.
I want this for me. And it will make it harder for her to say no.
Oh, that's a good take on it.
Right.
I took it the other way. I interpreted it the other way. I took it as Nick knows that Amy's putting her best foot forward.
Yeah.
And he's putting his best foot forward. They need to appear to be the perfect couple.
Right.
They need to appear to be this grandiose thing. Mm-hmm. And he overhears these reporters being like, oh, you're not... Amazing Amy is so much better than you. you think Amazing Amy has done everything that you should have done.
Uh-huh.
And he'll then step in and be sort of like, you are so accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
You are so gorgeous. You have a world-class vagina.
Ugh.
How about we... Yeah.
Grim.
How about we make it official? Yeah. Why don't we make Amazing Amy... Let's leave Amazing Amy behind us because we're the perfect couple. And he does it in front of five people who are...
Reporters.
Contemporaries.
Yeah.
Who are going to report this amazingly romantic proposal in all of their publications, and it's going to go out everywhere that the real Amazing Amy is now even more amazing. He knew exactly what the fuck he was doing. This dude is so cold and calculated. I'm telling you, get a few watches deep.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Dunn is terrifying.
Okay.
He's one of the scariest characters in cinema I've seen in years.
I'm going to concede the point. We're running low on time.
We are.
And I did not start this recording thinking that I was going to be swayed on this.
Dude, the rage bubble that just hit me. If you'd have just told me 55 minutes in that you hadn't started recording, I was about to flip my desk. I was like, yeah, there's one bean in me, mate. I'm getting in the car and I'm fighting that bean to you through fists.
I won't agree that it's a perfect date movie.
Okay.
I'll say Magic Mike is the perfect date movie.
Why?
Because all the guys on screen do all the work. And then at the end of it, the film ends and they've got nothing to do with that built up frustration, but I'm there.
Yeah, but you're nothing like Magic Mike. They just, you setting the bar too high. Bad Boy Bubby, lower it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely not, mate. I was blessed with 9-inch penis, but that priest was arrested. So
yeah, fair. I say Bad Boy Bubby it, man. That dude f***s his mom. I don't. I'm better.
Getting the wind up and then just leaving it and going, well, there's only one bloke here. And it's me. So it's not going to be great.
Your perfect date is... Your perfect date is show people incredibly sexy people to get them in the mood, and you go, well, no better option.
Yeah.
That's not a perfect date movie. That's a
Ben,
that's
I'm gonna a disappoint them either way. I may as well be blatant about it.
No, dude, see, you're framing this wrong. Look, I learned a while ago, you can't walk into a bar and go, what's up, buddy? I'm hung like a moose. Because when you then go home with these people and you're not hung like a moose, it's a disappointment. Mm. But hear me out now, it's my dear boy. This is the life-changing lesson. This is the life-changing lesson. If you can walk in that bar and say, what's up? I'm hung like an acorn, and still get them to go home with you, and it's a bit bigger than an acorn, bonus.
Yeah, but your new game plus in it, mate, they're not going to come home with you.
You're saying this, develop personality, read a book. Rob, come on, I'm dyslexic and I read a bit of a book for this. You know what I mean?
I've got personality and I've got a book. The difference is,
Ben,
you're arguing from a position of privilege because you look like Chris Hemsworth found crack.
I look like Chris Hemsworth's asshole has been burned.
It's still a bit of Chris Hemsworth, no, right? You're literally an attractive man, Ben. You're starting from a position of privilege.
Thank you.
Right?
You're also very attractive.
You could, you know,
just
Ben, carry it a bit better.
Nick, done yourself.
Shut up.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Blend in.
You can read a book and develop a bit of personality. You go, oh, it's easy because you've got natural advantages, mate. You've got 3 extra inches of height on me, mate.
Height doesn't mean anything.
Oh, it means quite a lot, mate, when you happen to clap your hands together and go, uppies.
Yeah, that's cute as f***. Dude, kids have been doing that for generations. Are you joking? I don't see any mums being like, ugh.
Okay, yeah, kids have been doing that for generations, Ben, but that's why we don't fuck them.
You say that, but the priest.
I was blessed with a 9-inch penis.
There you go. Do you want to play a game?
I'd love to play a game.
Let's play a game.
I'd love to play a game. Let's play a game and then rate the movie.
Yeah. So we did a quiz yesterday when we tried recording this and it was shocking. That was the expert David Fincher quiz.
Yeah, I got a 10 out of 10.
You got 9 out of 10, but that's fine.
It's 10 out of 10. Mate.
You got 9 out of 10, but that's fine.
What happened doesn't matter. It's what people think's happened.
Oh, see? Edit it.
Right?
Yeah. I wasn't
editing it up.
I didn't masturbate. Right, I won a quiz. All right, so I found a new one. It took me 46 seconds-ish.
Oh,
and
amazing.
This one is called the whatculture.com, the David Fincher quiz. How well do you know the director's work? Now, I don't know how the website works because it just says answers at the end and it has one question on it. I can't find question 2. So I'm just going to wing it.
Okay.
See what happens.
This might be a really short quiz. It might be good.
Yeah. So how did David Fincher transition to becoming a film director? Is it A, he was already a music video director? B,
yes,
he taught film studies? C,
no,
he had just finished a media degree? Or D, he was a sound technician?
It was music videos.
Yes, he was.
The idea that anyone, I've been a sound technician, the idea that anyone looks at the sound technician and goes, have you got any ideas?
Yeah.
If anyone creative ever looked at me and went, what's your idea? I knew the session was fucked.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate creative bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Is asking the sound technician. I had ideas.
Yeah.
But no one needed to hear them.
Bro, I've sat on boards of directors. It's mental, the fact that I've been in those rooms. It's silly.
No, also, it's because you're a psychopath.
I figured out this quiz. So I've clicked your answer.
Right.
It doesn't tell me whether it was right or wrong. It was right, but it doesn't tell me that.
Okay.
And it just takes you through to a different website that is question 2. So
join us next week for Ben Figures Out Slideshows.
Yeah. It's slideshows. It's slide websites. It's a completely different website. Anyway, hear me out.
Nice.
What was Fincher's first feature length film?
Does David Fincher do all of his porn parodies?
I mean. Yeah. That's it. Was it 7, Fight Club, Alien 3, or The Game?
Well, I missed the question, mate. I was too busy laughing at David Fincher.
What was his first film?
Alien 3.
Yeah, there you go. In Zodiac, what newspaper do Gray Smith and Avery work at? The Sacramento Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Diego Chronicle, or the San Jose Chronicle?
Oh, because the Zodiac Killer famously did all of his killings around the San Jose area.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the San Francisco Chronicle.
All right. Well, we'll see at the end, won't we? How convenient is this, rather than just having it all on one page? Which of these music artists hasn't Fincher worked for?
Ooh.
Aerosmith, Nine Inch Nails, David Bowie, Billy Idol. Hasn't worked
David
for.
Bowie.
Hasn't
Never worked with David
for Bowie.
Bowie.
Okay.
Never worked with Bowie. Did Billy Idol, did the video for Only by Nine Inch Nails from their 2005 album With Teeth, and the Rolling Stones, he won the MTV Music Awards.
Okay. Question 5.
Mm-hmm.
Alien 3 was nominated for an Academy Award. Which one was it? Best Picture, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Visual Effects.
Best Visual Effects.
It was indeed. I hate this quiz. This was the worst. This was the worst.
Now you know what it was like to try and watch pictures of Gillian Anderson in 1998.
Yeah.
It's buffering.
Dude, I still do that now. And now it's, yes. Okay, so question six is internal server error. So,
I'm an idiot. I should have gone, it's what it's like looking at pictures of Sarah Michelle Gellar in 1998.
It's fine.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Damn it.
There you go.
Damn it.
That's what caused the internal server error, mate. So we don't know whether you got them right or not, because whatculture.com is just shit the bed. All right,
well, I'm going to say I got 10 out of 10.
I'm going to say 10 out of 10. Yeah, well done. 2025, amazing. New year, new you.
Hashtag blessed, mate. Yeah. What are you rating Gone Girl?
10.
10?
Fat 10. This is a fat 10.
Fat 10?
Yeah. This is one of my favorite films of all time. I can watch this nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
There is always something new that I notice. Nick Dunn is the most terrifying character in cinema by a long shot. The fact that doing the research on this film, every person that I've seen with a blog or a magazine article slip up and call him Ben instead of Nick. And these aren't little publications. These are big, fully fledged publications will slip up and call him Ben rather than Nick. And it's terrifying that Ben Affleck has disappeared into a role so much so that people have just forgot that it's a character.
There's a fact about Ben Affleck in this movie where obviously he's read the script, he knows what happens in it.
Yeah.
And he gets in touch with Fincher and he goes, so this young student I have an affair with, I've got a casting suggestion. And Fincher's like, oh, who? And he's like, oh, Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah.
Ratajkowski. I think you should see it. And Fincher's like, oh, okay. So Ben Affleck pulls up the music video for Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke.
Banger.
Where she is in her early 20s and just full nude.
Okay.
And just goes, I think I should
She's
be in this.
She's not full nude. She has tan underwear on and sneakers.
Oh, okay. Oh, sneakers. Yeah. That makes the difference. Right,
I'm not overly familiar with the video. I'm not overly familiar
right,
with it.
Okay.
I'm just somewhat familiar with it.
What brand are the sneakers, Ben?
Nikes. It's
okay. Okay. It's, yeah.
I only know that because I was like, that's a little bit Heaven's Gatey. That's a little bit Heaven's Gatey.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It was a cult research point that I thought, who else wears Nike sneakers? And had that on repeat for about 14 to 15 strokes. But then
Ben Groves.
What are you rating it?
When we recorded this the other day.
Yesterday.
I was thinking about my experience watching it. And I remember the first time I watched it, I thought it was incredible. I thought it was mint. I thought it was like, there was not a hair out of place in this movie.
Yeah.
And then I rewatched it for this and I didn't find myself as engaged because I kind of knew what was coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
And the film was asking me, it was providing mystery.
Mm-hmm.
For a new viewer that I already had the answer to, and that was kind of tiring. I was like, oh, I know, David. Like, I know where we're going to end up. There's not much for me here.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I've been thinking about, like, the technicality, and this is the thing with David Fincher. He's so good at making films that talking about his filmmaking process is kind of empty calories because there's no drama. Like Christopher Nolan, every movie he makes, there's some bizarre new stunt that he's doing. I'm going to take the wings off a plane in midair.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to buy a jumbo jet and I'm going to drive it through an airport building and film it all on analog film IMAX cameras.
Yeah.
Wicked. We can talk about that for days. David Fincher turns up and goes, I made a brilliant film. I came in under budget. The filming schedule was stuck to the letter.
Yeah.
And the film's mint. And you're like,
yeah,
that's difficult to pull much drama out of, David. Could you not just up a bit?
Yeah, I made a film and it went really well. Fantastic. Right, good right. for you. Also, and, fuck off.
right. And so with that in mind, I'm thinking like it's tempting to sort of judge and mark this film against other David Fincher movies and go, oh, it's a 7 on a rewatch. But if I compare this to any other film, it's a perfect 10.
It is.
It's such a well-made film. So I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to go 9.5.
Okay.
And that's a very long answer to a very simple question.
Justified, though. Justified. So just before we wrap up the show, If you've enjoyed this episode and you want to support the show, you can leave us a review. But most importantly, tell a friend.
Tell a friend.
It helps us so much. You have no clue what it does.
Really does.
To watch the numbers grow little bit by little bit, even if it's by one.
Mm-hmm.
That little word of mouth has done an insane amount of value for our show.
Sharing our stuff on your socials, all this kind of stuff, like commenting, it really, really helps. Now, if you want more show, more content, and an extra episode every month, you can support us over on Patreon for as low as £1 a month.
£1 a month, guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. We love and appreciate each and every one of you more than you will ever know. Thank you for the continued support, even though we've had some time away. It's been nice to see the back catalogue, be tickled.
We've recharged. I know some of you have listened to old episodes or stuff that you've missed or you've sort of fallen behind. We've given you a chance to catch up. I've got all the beans. Ben's got, have you got a bean?
You've got two beans.
There we go. And to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week, Ben's now going to wrap up thoughts, themes, and feelings of this movie into a little Monday motivational pep talk.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to consume.
I say because Amy's such a strong feminist character, I think we start looking at her what she did in this film for humans as a whole. You know what I mean? I feel like we can take lessons, leaves out of her book, if you will, for anyone who wrongs you. Let's say you go to the chip shop and your scallop is a hair thinner than normal, frame him for murder. You know what I mean? Frame him for your murder. Do you like fantasy? Independent artists? Dragons? Dungeons and Dragons? Of course you do, you massive nerd. And so you should, because so do I. Emma Law Rich is an independent artist who makes amazing products to show off that nerd pride. Incredible quality acrylic charms, stickers, shaker charms, spinning charms, acrylic pins, custom art prints, everything. Loads. There's tons. It's all available right now. I got my shaker charm the other day. It's like a beholder, you know, from D&D with like this, you shake it and it's got the shaky eye. And when I shake it, the eye moves. It's fucking dope. Emma will be appearing at MegaCon Live 2025 on the 25th and 26th of January at the XL in London. If you're heading to MegaCon, make sure you go see her. Tell her that we sent you and get yourself some insanely cool nerd pride. If you're not heading to MegaCon this year, first off, why not? Second off, head on over to emmalawrich.com, that's emmalawrich.com, and grab your goodies from there. Go follow her on Instagram. Thanks again to Emma Law Rich for sponsoring this episode.